Subway Everyday Value means many mouth-watering pile-high favorites are $5 footlongs, like the fresh-toasted tempting meatball marinara and made-to-your-order BLT. The $5 footlong anthem rolls on only at Subway, where great everyday value lives. Subway, eat fresh.
The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to BS Report. It's a little hodgepodge podcast for you today. We have Chad Millman coming up a little bit later to talk about Duke Butler. And then at the very end, I'm going to call Jacko. Hopefully he'll answer. If he doesn't, we'll understand. But right now, from the NFL Network, from the National Football Post, and a longtime Philadelphia observer, fan, I don't even know what you'd call Mike Lombardi, what's happening?
Yeah, I guess I'm a fan. I mean, you know, it's always tough when you grow up in a city that relishes in making trades. Remember the Wilt Chamberlain deal? We got Archie Clark out of that, so that worked out well for us.
But at least you won a title with Wilt Chamberlain before you traded him. In this case, Donovan McNabb, I thought his quote was interesting. He said, I had a great run here, blah, blah, blah. We did everything but win a Super Bowl. And that's basically what it came down to. He didn't win the Super Bowl, so they traded him, right?
You know, I think there's a host of things. I think certainly he ran his course at Philadelphia, the confidence of the fans and the young quarterback playing behind him. I think Philadelphia's going to miss Donovan. I really do. I think at the end of the day, you know, good is still maybe not the Super Bowl, but at least they got them to the point where they were very competitive. His winning percentages ranks in the high of going to Peyton Manning and Tom Brady and that class. So I think it's a little bit one of those where I think they're going to miss him in due time.
I remember heading into the playoffs, I said to you that I felt like this was a do-or-die playoffs for McNabb, and that if they got bounced again this year, especially in bad fashion, that they just had to break this up for the fans. They had to either break up McNabb or Reed, somehow break up one of the two, send one of them out, and Reed was signing an extension, so it obviously wasn't going to be him. You disagreed at the time, and you said, oh, no, they'll never break those guys up. What changed in those 4 months?
You know, in the beginning of this offseason, it didn't appear that it was going to change either. They were talking about maybe trading Michael Vick and maybe not even paying the $1.5 million roster bonus at the beginning of the year. I just think as the longer this went along, and I think the reality of Donovan McNabb not getting an extension from the Eagles, feeling like he was never going to get the respect he deserved, kind of was left out to dry at one time in his career, certainly in the Baltimore game when he got pulled at halftime and Kevin Cobb came in and certainly didn't play very well at that point. I think he was looking for a little bit of more security, and each day that passed in the offseason, that security became less and less. And at the end of the day, McNabb basically knew that this was the point of no return. I just thought the Eagles team was built around McNabb, and I still do. And I think his powerful arm, his ability to move in the pocket, made them an explosive offense, second only to the New Orleans Saints. And I would have rather had him come back one more year and play and lose him to free agency like so many other players do than to trade him within the division.
It's a nice pick to get, though, that beginning of the second round. It's from a salary standpoint, you know, that's a pick the Patriots always like to get in that 31 to 44 range. And also, they had a surplus at QB, and they have they kept their first rounder. So, I mean, you could argue, you know, is the drop off from McNabb to Kevin Cobb and with Vic coming in on short packages, all that stuff, is it really going to be that dramatic?
Oh, I think it'll be somewhat dramatic. I think they'll go back to a West Coast style of offense. You know, with Vic, it was with McNabb, it was vertical passes up the field, big plays. They were the number one team in the National Football League in four plays or less scoring drives. So they could really, with those young receivers, they made plays up the field. And I think at the end of the day, that's what McNabb did best. He wasn't a West Coast quarterback. He wasn't a rhythm passer. He wasn't an accurate passer on all throws. He was accurate down the field. And his escapability, even at his age, and remember, he's still a year younger than Peyton Manning, so he still has a lot of youth in him, and he was able to move around and make plays with his feet, something that Eagle offensive line needed last year, especially against the Cowboys, which they didn't block very well.
But we saw in the playoffs, you're right, he made big plays, but teams were just basically, he became like a home run hitter that couldn't get on base unless he hit a home run. And teams and especially in the playoffs, they just took away the deep ball, and he didn't really have a plan B. Like, to me, watching him, I just felt like that was a guy who had run his course in Philly, just for the way their offense worked versus what his capabilities were at age 33. We disagree on this one. I really think it was time to cut the cord. Like, I just don't think they were never going to win a Super Bowl with the guy. And on top of that, I do think the backup was good. I watched him play. When did he get a few games in a row? Was it last year or the year before? Well, it was last year.
Go back to the preseason. He didn't play well in the preseason. There was some concern in Philadelphia about him. Averaged about 55% completion. Wasn't looking spectacular, especially in the last game of the preseason, which he played a lot. And then the second game of the season, he starts against the Kansas City Chiefs, and he looks extremely well. But a lot of people look good against the Chiefs. But he had a game plan. He had a week of practice. So certainly you think he's going to come back. And then the next week against New Orleans Saints, he plays. He plays well. Even though they lose the game's close at the half. He's throwing the ball effectively up and down the field. So he had 250 yards of offense in that game. So I think certainly Cobb came around. There was some doubt leaving preseason to when finally after those two starts. But again, now, you're a basketball expert. When it takes a while for a guy to declare what he is in basketball. And that's the same thing that happens in football. If you're a quarterback in the NFL, it takes about 20 games before you really understand who you are. Michael Vick can come in and play, and then people start defending him a certain way, and they make him stay in the pocket. And I think Kevin Cobb hasn't gone through that transitional period yet. What is he? What kind of strengths does he have? What throws does he like? Teams will take that away and see if he can still execute. I think the success that Aaron Rodgers had in Green Bay, running the pure West Coast system, is probably what led Andy Reid to make this ultimate decision.
Can we say that, looking back, I know McNabb's had incredible success, awesome starter record, all that stuff. Was he ever really totally a West Coast quarterback?
No, it was never. And that's the thing I marveled. I give Andy Reid complete credit for this. We know we kid about Andy Reid's game management, but I think what he did, probably the best thing he's done in his tenure in Philadelphia, was modify the offense to fit the skill set of Donovan McNabb. A vertical down the field. We played him when I was at the Oakland Raiders in 2001, and he was 0 for 10 on third down. He couldn't hit the broadside of a barn. Short passes, was all over the dirt. And then eventually they got to the place where they found his niche, they found his rhythm, and they found the kind of game he could play. Always could make plays with his feet, always was movable, always could do things. And I think that's where Mike Shanahan sees this talent. I think Mike Shanahan, this is a deadly combination, Bill. Mike Shanahan's a coach who's been fired, who's got a lot to prove. Donovan McNabb just recently fired, traded, however you want to call it. He's got a lot to prove. This is the big year for the Redskins.
When you say deadly, do you mean it's going to murder the Redskins fans, or do you think it's deadly for the rest of the league?
No, I think this is the first time, if I'm a Redskin fan, I actually feel like somebody's in the building and knows what he's doing. I think there's just not wasteful money being spent. I think they're trying to rebuild the team. And if you look at Mike Shanahan's history, it's always been his defense that's let him down, never really his offense. Jake Plummer, he makes him effective enough to go to a playoff game. They didn't win a playoff game, but they had some issues defensively. And I think at the end of the day, Mike Shanahan can control how well his offense plays, how his offensive line plays. And if you're a Redskin fan, you have to feel fairly good that he'll make Donovan a good player and he'll fix the offensive line. And with that defense, as good as it is, I think they have a chance to really compete. I know one thing. If I'm a Cowboy or a Giant fan, I'm asking myself, why did Andy Reid do this to me?
The McNabb and Shanahan combo. I mean, the guys that, as you pointed out, Jake Plummer had a lot of success with Shanahan because he kind of fit him in. Hey, Jake, I don't want you to take a lot of chances. I want you to just manage the game, be my game manager. Jay Cutler never really, never had enough time to let that relationship blossom. Elway had so much success during the Terrell Davis era with it becoming more of a game manager. They always talked about that. Can Donovan McNabb be a game manager?
I think he will be. Remember now, in Philadelphia, what's the number one criticism of Andy Reid? He never calls run plays. Well, that's not going to happen with Mike Shanahan. Mike Shanahan's going to take the burden of the game a little bit off Donovan McNabb and put it on his running game and make you defend the run and have you honor the running game. And I think he's always been successful, no matter who the back has been, going from Terrell Davis on to other guys, Mike Bells, players that you really don't even know. That was the running joke in the NFL. Which fifth rounder is Mike Shanahan going to draft to make him a 1,000-yard rusher? I think that mentality comes to Washington now, and it takes the burden off of Donovan McNabb. It puts the big play back in his arm, and I think he'll manage him effectively, and he'll game plan manage him effectively. That's the key issue, and I think that's what he'll do best. Mike Shanahan always attacks your defense in the right areas with his offense. And I think that's what we've got to make people in the NFC East a little nervous.
He doesn't have nearly the same types of receivers that he had in Philly. How do they fix that?
No, he doesn't. I mean, Santana Moss is not the same player he once was. They have to hope Devin Thomas comes along. But then there's a draft, and you get some young receivers to get them to come in here and find a way to get it to just really start to make some plays. But I think they have skill players at tight end. Fred Thomas showed last year. Chris Cooley's a good player. So I think there's some things he can do. And Mike's scheme can certainly help him win. I mean, he knows how to attack defenses. And if you can do that in the NFL and get away from press, which these receivers have a chance to do, he'll make plays.
Brandon Marshall?
I don't think he goes there. Obviously, the fourth pick in the draft, he needs a left tackle.
Right. You know, so you're saying the only way to get Brandon Marshall is to give up the fourth pick in the draft?
Well, they're going to have to give up a first-round pick to get Brandon Marshall.
Well, you don't give up the fourth pick for him, though. I mean,
Denver
would do that in a millisecond.
If you don't do it on an offer sheet, you have to give it up your own first.
Well, doesn't Denver have two picks, though?
Denver has two. Seattle, they traded their pick to Seattle for Alphon Smith, the little corner from Wake Forest.
So maybe
sense for Seattle to go after him because they could basically give Denver back their pick. It makes sense for San Francisco to go after him. They have two first-round picks.
Well, I was
but
thinking maybe.
San Francisco wasn't even interested in entertaining Donovan McNabb, which is remarkable to me.
Yeah, I actually thought that was the biggest surprise of this whole thing, that they did not get involved. I mean, talk about overrating one of your own players. Does anybody think Alex Smith is the answer?
Obviously, the 49ers do. And I've said this before. I've written this numerous times. The biggest mistakes you make in an organization is misevaluate your own team. And I think the 49ers, if they honestly believe they can win a Super Bowl with Alex Smith at quarterback, then I'm wrong. And maybe they will, but I don't see it. I think if you would add a Donovan McNabb to this team, all of a sudden in the NFC West, where there's really no clear winner with their defense, I think they could have taken over, and they would have given their fans a lot of reason for hope. Look, if you're a Redskin fan now, you've got a chance at hope. I mean, Mike Shanahan has decided that, okay, I can't get Sam Bradford. I don't think Jimmy Clausen's the right fit. I'm not going for Tim Tebow. Colt McCoy's only going to be a down-the-line player. I need to get a legitimate player in here, and he made the trade.
If you're a Washington fan, though, you have two red flags. The first one is that Philly felt so unthreatened by Donovan McNabb going to a new team that they traded him within their division. Like, to me, that's a giant red flag. That would be like, you know, me offering to sell you a car out of nowhere. And you being like, really? Why do you want to sell your car? I thought you loved it. Oh, I do love it. I just, you know, it's time for a change. No, I think
John
you should
Voight
have it.
John Voight drove it. That's probably why. You probably think I'll fall for the John Voight car thing.
Yeah. So that's red flag number one. Red flag number two is Washington, as my editor-in-chief Rob King pointed out on his Twitter yesterday. Washington has a history of getting involved with these guys that are a little past their prime, that look better on paper than maybe the results are. And Donovan McNabb is just, it's like the Jaromir Jagr thing all over again. It just fits into what has happened to this city with sports.
I don't see that. I see, you know, when Drew Bledsoe was traded to Buffalo for the first round pick, I thought Drew Bledsoe's lack of mobility, his lack of being able to make a loose play once the protection broke down was the reason why he got traded. I don't see it with Donovan. I still see him as a creative player with his feet. He still has his athleticism. I think durability is a concern, and I would echo those, and those are the sentiments coming out of Philadelphia, and I think there's some point to that. That being said, I still think his arm's strong, he throws the ball well, he can make every throw, and he can elude the rush. I don't see a declining player here at all. In fact, I see probably now a hungry player to prove that the city of Philadelphia is wrong, and he's in his last year of his contract.
And we have an awesome game. See, this is one of the great things about these a trade like this, is now we actually have two awesome games, but the really awesome game is going to be him coming back to Philly. Okay. How do you think he gets received?
Well, you know, I think obviously everybody is going to get received by boos. So, you know, he's going to get booed, and I think he'll play well. I think he'll play well. I think he'll be comfortable playing there. I think he enjoys the discontent that he's always felt from Philadelphia. He's never let it bother him. I mean, he's always been resilient. He's never backed down from it. I think he'll play well. I think the Redskins are going to be a well-coached team, something they weren't last year, and I think they'll be much better for it. I think Donovan will play a key part in that.
Shanahan ended up falling apart in Denver because Shanahan, the GM, killed Shanahan, the coach. It seems like Shanahan is making the decisions here, at least to some degree, in Washington, or am I wrong?
No, he's making them all. I don't think Mike Mike didn't come back into the NFL to take orders from anybody else. Bruce Allen has the title of GM, but Mike Shanahan's making all these calls, and he's doing everything what he wants to do. So,
But the Denver fans are laughing right now because they watched him firsthand. His personnel moves, he didn't come through for years.
Right, and I think when you look at and analyze them, most of them were the mistakes on offense. I mean, when he goes for offensive players, look at what he left Denver with. You know, Ryan Clady's a good left tackle. Ryan Harris is a good right tackle. They've got a good running back. You know, they've got a good quarter. They had a good quarterback in Jay Cutler. He was mad. Brandon Marshall's a fourth round pick. He picks players that fit his system offensively. Defensively, where he really got discombobulated in terms of fitting the talent within the system that he needed. And I think if you're a Denver fan, you were always worried about when he drafted a defensive player, whether it would be Willie Meadowbrooks, the corner, or whomever. And I think that now that he's got a really good defense, he doesn't have to tinker that much with it. The strength now has to come into what he does on offense.
I mean, one of the things that happened to him in Denver that became a problem is he was going for named guys who just weren't the same player anymore. Makes me wonder if Donovan is potentially going to be in that mix. You're right, though. If you're a Redskins fan, though, you're more excited than you were 48 hours ago. There's no question, because this is the best possible quarterback he could have gotten.
I mean, Donovan had a season last year, where it rivaled what Drew Brees was doing down in New Orleans. The explosiveness of the Philadelphia offense was very similar to the New Orleans Saints. So I think that if you're a Redskin fan and you believe in Mike Shanahan as a coach and you believe he can make the offense better, and if your defense can play to the level of their talent, I think you're right there in the mix. I know the Giants are certainly got to be worried about it, and I know the Cowboys have to be worried about it, because the Redskins, for all their four wins last year, they were competitive as bad as they were on offense.
There really weren't any other QB candidates of his caliber, obviously. Who do you think was the next best guy they could have gotten?
I think that's the decision he had to sit and make, and I think ultimately he decided that he'd rather go with Donovan McNabb than take a chance on Jimmy Clausen.
So that would have been the other move, you think?
I think that would have been his only other move. I mean, I can't see him going for anybody else other than that area, because he had, Sam Bradford should be the first pick in the draft. I think Sam Bradford was somebody he wanted. The Rams are basically playing a hostage. They don't want to give up the pick, but they'll give it up if you pay a lot for it. That's not going to happen. So he can't get Bradford. He went through Bradford. He's looked at Tebow. He's looked at all the quarterbacks. I think now he decided, look, I'd rather have Donovan McNabb for a second than pick Colt McCoy in a second and hope I have a starter 3 years down the line.
Gotcha.
Makes sense to me.
Explain to me, one more Washington question, but explain to me the uncapped year, why Dan Snyder just hasn't gone completely over the top and just spent money like Tony Montana and Scarface.
Well, because there's not a lot of good players, and I think that's the reality of it. I think right now the market doesn't lend itself to, because of the shift in free agency from 4 years to 6 years, there's not enough good players in that 6 year, 7 year range that he could really spend money on. Now, next year, if we're uncapped, he will be very active. But this move, he brings $12 million onto his payroll, and that's a huge number. And so he obviously is spending here, and he's got to have to re-sign McNabb after this year, or else the trade doesn't seem to be worthwhile. So I think he's being cautiously careful with his money, which he needed to do. I think this is the first time Daniel Snyder behaved in the fashion he needs to behave in.
We haven't talked in a couple months. I thought the weirdest thing that's happened during this offseason so far was Seattle trading for some guy I'd never heard of on San Diego. And they gave, what did they give up for him?
They gave up, they flopped in the second, and they gave up another pick.
But it was a 20 spot flop, though.
Yeah, no, it was a significant flop. But, I think this is no different than when Mark Brunell was traded down to Jacksonville. Nobody was sure about Mark Brunell. This is no different than when Matt Hasselbeck was traded to Seattle for a first-round pick. People said, who? Matt Hasselbeck? He was a fifth-round pick. You know, this happens a lot, and I think it comes with the confidence in what you believe you can do. Charlie Whitehurst, if you talk to any of the Charger people, they think he's got a great arm. He's an athletic guy who can move around, just never had an opportunity to play. He's tough. He's got leadership skills. They liked him in San Diego, but we're never going to make a move. And I think that clearly the Seattle made a look at Charlie Whitehurst as he relates to all the other players in this draft and decided they needed to do that. He's better than what Seneca Wallace could have brought to him, so they got rid of him. I think for the fan standpoint, it's strange. But I think if you believe in what they're going to do offensively, Whitehurst will fit what they do, and hopefully Whitehurst has enough of the intangibles to carry him over the top.
How is Pete Carroll, a guy who's been in college for the last 10 years, have an opinion on Charlie Whitehurst?
Well, I think it goes back to Jeremy Bates, the offensive coordinator of the Seattle Seahawks. He was in the league. He scouted Charlie Whitehurst. He went to work him out when he was at Denver, so he knows him. He's familiar with him. Alex Gibbs, in the league. They know him. They see him on tape. They've watched him. They talk to people. So I think ultimately it came down to the offensive staff wanting him. Look, when Matt Schaub was traded from the Atlanta Falcons to the Houston Texans, there was a lot of people thinking, oh, well, this guy's going to be the same. His arm's a little weak, not great. Again, it comes down to the system that fits the player perfectly.
But he had played some games, though.
Right. But the fact is, you got to take a chance on some player. I mean, Kevin Cobb, up until the preseason this year, wasn't really a good player. I mean, he didn't have a good preseason. Now he's got these 200-300-yard games that the Eagles are changing their whole franchise over with. And maybe they're doing the right thing, but you got to be careful.
What team improved the most since the end of the Super Bowl to right now, other than the Redskins? You can't say that.
Well, you know, I don't think the Bears have improved the most, because I think the Bears have some questions about how they're going to implement this defense and if they're going to stay with their old structure, even though they had the biggest name player in Julius Peppers. But this is a free agency where I'm not sure anybody's really ultimately improved their football team that much. Miami, you know, really hasn't done anything. They signed the linebacker, Carlos Dansby, haven't done much more than that. The Jets, you know, is LT really going to make them a better team than what they were? I don't see that move. To me, that was the strangest move of the offseason, was LT.
Agreed.
That LT can still be LT.
Ugh. I laughed. I know, like, four Jets fans, and all of them were appalled. To make it worse, he played against them in the playoff game, and they're rooting for the Chargers in that game. They hand the ball off to him, overthrowing it.
And they're happy. And that's what made it so unbelievable. They're happy that they did it. And so, I thought that was the strangest move of free agency, even though people might question the Charlie Whitehurst. I could see teams taking a shot at a quarterback, but a broken-down running back who proclaimed he was healthy going into the final game against the Jets, and the more they gave him the ball, the Jets' defense looked much better. And if you're a Charger fan, you're wondering, why are we giving him the ball? We should have had Sproles in the game.
I was praying for the Patriots not to sign him. Praying every night. Praying with rosary beads. The draft, quickly. We left that college season. Everybody agreed that the Nebraska guy was the best guy. Oh, my God, the most dominant. And now all of a sudden, Sam Bradford's the number one pick. What happened?
Well, I think what happened was people went back, studied Sam Bradford's shoulder. He's healthy there. They watched his tape. He's not under shot. He's not in shotgun as much as many people suspect he was. He built his body. He's up to 236. He's accurate with the football. I think he has some unique skills. He's a similar player to Mark Sanchez, smart, cerebral. He'll understand how to play. I think he clearly has differentiated himself from the other quarterbacks in the draft class. The Rams haven't picked a quarterback since 1967 in the first round. They traded Jim Everett, but they didn't really pick him in the draft. So they need a quarterback, and I think that's what puts him ahead of Ndamukong Suh. Still, to me, the best player in the draft.
But the other defensive tackle, on some people's opinion, passed him too. Dorsey?
Yeah, you know, I
no,
think
what's his name?
Gerald McCoy. But,
yeah, I'm sorry.
You know,
who's Dorsey? Glenn Dorsey? I've got mixed up.
Gerald McCoy from Oklahoma.
Yeah,
you know,
gotcha.
I happen to like Sue better. I think Sue's more powerful. I think he can rush on third down. McCoy seems to win some votes because you can see him more on third down in action. But Ndamukong Suh dominated games every time that I watched him play. I like him. I think McCoy's going to be a fine player. And I really think if the Redskins pick in fourth, if it goes what we just talked about, Russell Okung is the best left tackle in the draft, and they will get a very good football player. They'll get a 10-year player at left tackle that can be very good.
Is there any chance C.J. Spiller drops to my Patriots?
I don't see that. No, I don't see that. You know, certainly I think you could buy C.J. Spiller a little bit less than Javid Best if you wanted to go in that direction. It'll be interesting. I have a feeling the Patriots might end up with about 8 second-round picks this year. Just somehow I think that. I don't know. They'll just keep trading down until they get a bunch of them.
I'm hearing a lot of Tebow buzz.
There's a lot of Tebow buzz everywhere. I think Tebow buzz is, in fact, Bill, Tebow buzz is so strong now that Buffalo, and this is rumor and speculation, can't be proved, but Buffalo is considering him at the 9th spot.
Joe Mead. Joe Mead?
Yeah, yeah.
Did you hear that? What do you think of that? Joe Mead's a huge Buffalo Bills fan, Mike.
Yeah, I know, and I think what's happened to Buffalo is they were the illusion, or they believed that Tebow probably would make it to them in the second. Now everybody, and I wrote this Sunday that I thought Tebow's going to go in the bottom of the first, and I wouldn't be surprised if he keeps moving up. people that work him out, they love him. Seattle spent a long time with him. Mike Shanahan was supposed to spend 2 days with him this week. Obviously, that's going to get canceled. But I think everybody that works him out, they like his delivery. They think he's improved in that area, and they love the intangibles.
I mean, number nine is ridiculous. That just shouldn't happen. If they traded down, though, to, like, you know, number 18 and picked up an extra third-round pick and then took him there, wouldn't that make more sense?
Yeah, it would if you made sure that the teams you were trading down to weren't going to pick a quarterback. And that's the one thing about the quarterbacks in the draft. You always kind of have to know who's going to come after a quarterback. And this Tebow thing is so secretive, so peculiar that, you know, Jacksonville says they're not, but really are they? Some teams think Jacksonville's still going to be in play. So I think it's very difficult to gauge who really genuinely likes Tim Tebow and who doesn't.
I hate to use this analogy because it's something that the way NBA teams thought in the 70s and 80s, and it almost always didn't work. You never want to draft a guy because you think he's going to sell tickets. But if I'm Buffalo and I'm Jacksonville, the guy not only sells tickets, but he creates a buzz that no other player in the draft would create. I think you have to think about it. If your franchise is struggling, you know, and it might move or might whatever, you know, this is a guy that might save you from that, right?
Yeah, no. And there's a lot of people that I respect in the National Football League that think Tim Tebow can be an excellent NFL quarterback. And they think that they certainly have to modify the offense around them. And then you add the intangibles. You know, this isn't picking, you know, some player that goes to Indiana if you're the Pacers because you think he's going to sell some tickets.
Yeah.
Now, what was that Damon? What was that kid's name?
Steve Alford was one of them. Yeah, Reggie Miller over Steve Alford. And everybody wanted Steve Alford.
This isn't that situation. I think this is a legitimate NFL player that you have to be really careful that you have the right system in place for him to run. But I think that teams feel like he can be an NFL quarterback.
I'm a fan, and I think we've learned over and over again over the last 20 years that the things that you think make a good quarterback don't necessarily do sometimes. But the one thing they all have in common is, like, command, locker room presence, character, leadership, things that just aren't going to come up in these combines. And he has all of those things. And we just saw Drew Brees win a Super Bowl. And this is a guy everybody crapped on in his draft and looked for reasons why he shouldn't take him. And ultimately, you know, the guy's a champion. So, I think it's cliched to use the whole you can't measure heart and all that stuff. But at the same time, in the quarterback position, it does seem like it's a position that transcends just talent. And you really have to look at other things and the makeup of the guy and stuff that you just aren't going to be able to easily translate to some sort of combine.
Exactly. And it has to be the right system. You know, if Joe Montana would have gone to another team, would he have been as successful? He probably would have had success, but would he have maximized his career the way he did? I don't think so. So I think the system has to marry the quarterback, and you've got to utilize the skills that he can do effectively, and you've got to put him in place to be very productive. And that's what it comes down to. That's what makes me believe the Mike Shanahan move with Donovan McNabb is going to work out because of Shanahan's ability to coach the quarterback. And that's why whomever gets Tim Tebow, if it's a coach who, and I've said this all along, it has to be somebody who runs an organization that's out of an offensive mind, I think could make this thing work so very successfully.
And you think that he has now reached a point where he's 100% going to play quarterback? He's not going to be quarterback / H-back, like, you know, used in different things. He'll just be exclusively a quarterback.
Yeah, I think he's definitely going to be just a quarterback. I think he's not going to move. People have worked him out enough to realize that he brings enough intangibles and enough skill set to the field that they can utilize his offense and make it work effectively.
Mike Lombardi, National Football Post, NFL Network, and please come on again before the draft.
Yeah, I got to have you on. Yeah, we got to. And then we have to talk to the NBA. I mean, you know, I'm behind here. You know, I'm dying, and who do you like tonight, Butler or Duke? Can I get that out of you?
I like Duke. I think Butler's been smoking mares for 5 games now. At some point, the smoke of the mares collapse.
I respect Butler because I think they
Me
play
too.
With such great heart, and they play with such intensity, and I mean, they really play the way I think most teams in America would love to play.
It's a good story, and believe me, nothing would make me happier than Butler beating Duke, because who's more fun to root against than Duke? All right, we'll talk to you before the draft.
Thanks, Bill.
National championship game tonight, Duke-Butler. There's a chance that by the time you hear this, the game will have already happened, but if not, let's go to our Vegas expert, our Vegas insider, our gambling expert. He's in all kinds of an expert, Chad Millman. What's happening?
How you doing?
You're on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. You're in the ESPN, the magazine offices, and a lot of action on Duke. The line has moved a point and a half. What is the explanation?
Well, I think a lot of that is coming from immediately guys didn't know whether or not Howard and Mack were going to be playing. So as soon as they see that and they see Duke as a six-point favorite when it opened, that's what they're going to be. That's what they're going to be playing. And I know a lot of guys had their rating at just about six. So that was six when Butler was at full strength. They thought they were getting an opportunity, so they immediately started betting on Duke, and the line moved up pretty quickly, actually.
And what is it right now? 7.5?
7.5 is the last that I saw. I checked about 2 hours ago.
And the money line's probably, I'm guessing, like about 260, 270?
Do you know what?
I'm going to look that up as we talk.
Yeah, we can look it up as we discuss.
Because the Sharps have loved Butler, really, for the last 3 months and have been riding them like Willie Shoemaker. And it just seems like the perfect way to end this whole Butler gambling run would be to just grab the money line with them and just go all in.
Well, yeah, I mean, they have loved them, but here's the thing. Duke has been showing in this particular tournament, and they've been showing well. So they've not only been – they've been covering easily in their games.
Yeah.
And it isn't like Duke teams of the past, but this team in particular has all the things that you look for in a team that you like to bet on. They're very efficient offensively. They don't turn the ball over. They shoot threes well. They're very good in perimeter defense. All these things lead to a team being able to limit second-chance points and develop their own and score as many points as they possibly can. So it leads to huge margins against the spread. And that's sort of what you're seeing, and that's why the line went up a little bit. You know, in this tournament specifically, a lot of the guys that I've been talking to on a regular basis have been saying they've been playing Duke, even though they sort of all have this bias against Duke. This particular team is a little different, and not just in personality that everyone can root for, but in the way they've been playing against the spread.
Well, going into the tournament, didn't we think that maybe they relied on the three a little bit too much, and one of these games it was going to come back to haunt them?
You know, we did, and that's sort of the rap against Duke, and I was saying the same thing, and a lot of the guys I was talking to were saying the same thing. But if you looked at some of the metrics that the wise guys use, specifically offensive efficiency, you looked at point per game differential, adjusted for strength of schedule, things like that, Duke actually shows very, very well. And those are things that you have to be consistent at over the course of the year. So they were actually showing that they were good at certain elements of the game and consistent in certain elements of the game that a lot of guys, I think, were avoiding or ignoring because they just have this bias against Duke and Coach K and the uniform and the way they've historically played.
And another one was the offensive rebounding.
Yes.
Which they love, which I hadn't really thought of that for as like a major factor for college basketball. But then you watch, forget what game it was when Duke had the 23 offensive rebounds. Who did they play in that game? It was one of the final eight games. Well, I can find it right now. But they crashed the boards in that game, and I wasn't expecting that from Duke. But the wise guys, they're in on that stuff. Oh, it was Baylor. That's who it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just crashed the boards on them, and that was probably the main reason they won. I'm still waiting for them to have a game where they shoot 4 for 25 from three, but maybe, you know, we only have one game left. Maybe
it's
not
going to
happen.
Left, so if it's not going to be tonight, it's not going to matter. And I think, but you know, the guy that I spoke to today, who sort of proved to be the best in the wise guy brackets, this guy Sal at Maddox Sports, and he was sort of saying to me that there's only two ways he thinks Duke can cover this game. And one is if they get every call from the refs, because Butler had been playing so physical throughout the tournament, and that's a big reason why they've been able to keep their games close, is they've been able to beat teams down. And also, if Duke just shoots the lights out in the on three-pointers. If they do those two things, then Butler's not going to cover. But I think there's some guys who are starting to feel like it might be time to buy back Butler if it gets closer to the game and they see that Mack and Howard are going to be playing.
Well, look at Butler's tournament here. So second round, Murray State, they win by two in a game they easily could have lost.
Yes.
Third round, Syracuse. Now, I think they should have lost that game. Syracuse just completely unraveled in the last 5 minutes. Terrible shots. The guards took over, started launching 25-footers. And I felt like Syracuse lost that game more than Butler won it. I still don't know how Syracuse lost that game. Kansas State, probably the best game they played out of the last five, I thought.
Yeah.
They were pretty
awesome.
Yeah, pretty good. Michigan State.
But the thing that's interesting about that Kansas State game is that Kansas State was coming off that double OT win. And
yes.
So you knew they were going to be a little lagged. And there was huge opportunity. I think Butler was plus four in that game. And almost every guy I know was playing Butler in that game because they saw Kansas State having to come back, you know, 36 hours and play a really physical team that is very patient on offense. So they knew Butler was going to run around on offense and make Kansas State chase them until they got a very good shot on offense. And so when Kansas State had energy, they were actually matching up really well. The fact that Butler didn't blow them out, I think, is an indication of actually just how good Kansas State was, but also could be something that guys are thinking about when they're playing against Duke, matched against peak performance.
And you had a good stat going into that game about the effects of double OT playing two nights later in college hoops. I think it was like 0-3 or something. It made me think.
Yeah, over the course. Yeah, exactly.
And
this year, I think if you include the regular season, it was 0-6. There was three games where it happened this year, and none of those teams covered the spread when they were playing within 36 to 48 hours after going double OT.
So then the last game they played, Michigan State, they win by two. An awful game. It's a rock fight.
It was an awful game. It was so funny. I was watching that game and the next game with a bunch of buddies, and we were just comparing how bad those two teams looked compared to how good West Virginia and Duke looked.
Yeah. So really, they could have lost any of the last four games if you factor in the whole what would have happened if in regulation in the Kansas State game had they not called that bogus three-pointer foul, basically, when they called it 2 seconds late and the guy ended up getting three free throws. If they win that game in regulation, maybe Kansas State is playing this game right now.
Well, absolutely. And I think, you know, one of the wise guys that I love, Alan Boston, who we've talked about a lot, you know, he went through the Michigan State-Butler breakdown. He actually had Michigan State, and I think he bet on Michigan State. He looked at it all. He's like, when I look back at their tournament, the only team they played that actually was sort of a game where they showed was Murray State. Every other game, there were circumstances that allowed them to win those games. And so that's why he was taking Michigan State over Butler. He was convinced of it. And who knows what team will happen and what the circumstances are. But circumstances are part of the game. And if it's happening that consistently, then there's got to be something they're doing to make those circumstances work to their advantage. You can't just keep saying in every game, well, they got lucky in this game, they got lucky in that game. I mean, they're doing something to create their own luck.
I think they're going to lose by 20, and I'm going to bet on Duke today, if only because it becomes the ultimate no-lose. If you win the bet, you win. If you lose, that means Duke loses, which is fantastic.
Well, it's an emotional hedge.
Yeah, it's an emotional hedge. I love it.
Yeah.
And I also might parlay them with Felix Hernandez tonight. That's right. I'm talking baseball.
Oh, goodness.
What do the Sharps think about the baseball bets? Just stay away in general? Or
oh, no.
Is there value in the first month? Or how does that work?
There's a lot of Sharps who A, they love the season win totals, the over-under season win totals. I think there's great opportunities in those. You know, they like Detroit this year. I think they like Detroit in the over. I think they like Cleveland in the under. They like Seattle in the over. There's a lot of sort of opportunities they see out there. But they're money line bets, and so you've got to pay more to win more. And those aren't great opportunities. If you're a square bettor, if you're a sharp bettor, you know, there's plenty of guys who make their living playing baseball, but a lot of the guys I know that I talk to who are serious football and basketball players, they pull back a little bit during the baseball season. They play a lot of poker. They relax. It's sort of that's where they get their casual bets in because it's a slower pace. I mean, that kind of betting is completely conducive to the kind of game that is played. So there's definitely guys that make their living, but not nearly as many as there's making, you know, college basketball and the NFL.
This year was rare because there was some futures that I really liked. But the problem is, it's really the worst bet to make because you have to put the money down 6-7 months in advance.
Yeah.
And when you think about it, just economically, it's stupid. You're taking money that, you're pulling it out of your account, not getting interest on it for 6-7 months. Cause I had a friend going to Vegas and we were talking about, can you put these down for me?
Right.
Cause it's more fun to have the ticket, I think, than to
Absolutely.
Do it online. Doing it online is boring. And it's just not that fun.
You know what? You sound like a veteran Wall Street thinker, because I have a buddy of mine who's a hedge fund guy who won't pay estimates every year because he'd rather pay the money at the end of the year because he thinks he'll make more investing his own money than he would if he paid the estimates, investing his own money than he would be charged interest.
Yeah.
At the end of the year. So he doesn't pay the estimates. He just takes the money, invests it, and thinks that whatever he's going to do is going to be higher than whatever interest he's charged for not paying the estimates.
Yeah, like let's say like one of the things I loved is the Red Sox 94.5. I just think they're going over. They're built for the regular season.
You're on the way, man.
Nothing. Yeah, they're 1-0 right now. So it's, I would have been 94 away.
Yep.
So -115. So I would have had to lay 1150 to win 1,000. Not to mention laying it way ahead of time, 6-7 months ahead of time. By the time it's just not a good investment.
No,
I don't think. Atlanta was another one. I liked Atlanta over 86. And then I liked, I really liked John Lester, 14.5 wins over.
That's,
and I liked Lester for 9-1 win the Cy Young. I was intrigued by, which I did think about. Now you'd be proud of us, Chad, me and Sal. Not only did we do Durant to win the scoring title, and it's going to come...
I remember you telling me that.
It's going to come down to the wire. But we also, right around the All-Star break, we took the former Sonics, now Oklahoma City. I won't say their last name. I refuse. 10-1 to win their division.
That was a great bet.
And they are now a game behind Utah and a game behind Denver. And they play Utah on Tuesday and Denver on Wednesday.
They could take that.
It's very exciting. I mean, Tuesday night at Utah is basically going to decide the bet. And very excited for that.
I love Westbrook.
Yeah, I mean, it's a young team. They're young and dumb. You like the young and dumb teams.
Right.
Now, I'm going to give one to you. This is one of my favorite gambling theories that somebody told me last year when somebody, a former NBA player, told me this. Portland in game 3, round 1. They're playing Houston. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Game 1. They have home court advantage, game 1 of the Houston series. And everybody in Portland's all fired up. Oh, our young team, blah, blah, blah. You know, all kinds of excitement in the arena. And you think, oh, they're definitely going to win this. They're going to have an awesome crowd tonight. They're going to win. No, they come out and they do an absolute stink bomb. They just suck. They're tight. The crowd immediately checks out and gets tense. And they lose by 15-20. So my friend says... That's a classic young team in a playoff series just getting deer in the headlights game. That always happens.
Right.
So I'm thinking, like, you know what? That does always happen. They, when you think about it, it's logical. Like, these guys have never been in a playoff. They've got a bunch of adrenaline and emotion. The fans shoot their wad even before their game. You know, they're standing for 10 minutes before the opening tip-off.
Right.
And then the other team comes out and goes up like 10-4. And then that team's like, oh, my God, what's it? And then everybody checks out and gets nervous, and then they lose by 20.
They have no energy.
Yeah. So I'm very excited for the former Sonics in whatever their first home playoff game
is. To bet against them.
Yes. What do you think of that?
I think it's a great play.
Yeah.
But then you almost assuredly have to bet on them in the next game.
Yes. Because then they've taken their lumps a little bit.
They're taking their lumps, but also the bookmakers are going to, you know, take into account sort of their coming out and laying an egg a little bit, and then you might get an advantageous number.
Because I remember the Celtics in 2002, they played the Nets. And this was the famous comeback game where they came down 25. That was another great example of this. You know, the first two games were in New Jersey. Comes back to Boston for game 3. Everybody's over the moon excited. It's a Saturday afternoon. People get there, you know, an hour and a half early. Everybody's drinking, like so much energy in the crowd. And we come out and we suck. And New Jersey knocks us. And we're down 20 in the first quarter. Ended up coming back that game, but it was the same kind of energy. So maybe even do the first half road team bet on that.
Do you ever bet on the games that you attend live?
Yeah, sometimes.
I find that I can't do it because I need to be watching it on television to sort of... I feel like I get a much better flow from the game, and I get a better sense of karma from the game if I can control my fast-forward, my rewind, if I can pause it, if I can sit in different places. I need to sort of have all that energy in my particular space. I can't do it at a game.
I am thinking of actually going to Vegas for the first weekend of NBA playoffs.
That'd be a fun weekend to go.
Yeah. It's April 18th, I think, and the games start at, 10 o'clock a.m. And I don't think there'll be a lot of people there. I've been there
before. I was going to say, no one will be there. You'll be able to get a seat wherever you want.
I could hang out with Teddy Covers, a couple others.
Listen, Teddy loves NBA first half.
Really?
Yeah.
So that'd be a fun column. Maybe you could come out. What are you doing that weekend?
I'm going to be at Disney World with my kids.
Come on, cancel.
If only wishing made it so.
I do think, though, that first weekend is great because there's always an upset. Because you can do the series bets, too, which are really fun.
Yeah.
There's always an upset. The game ones, gravitates toward the home teams usually in that game one, except for there's always like the one rogue game on the Saturday. You got 8 games in 2 days. You can do all the series bets, all that stuff. The only thing is I'd have to go back to collect the series bets.
Do you ever? Well, you can go back in September. Go back in August.
Oh, I'd go back earlier than that.
I mean, I want to do the Hilton contest.
The football one. I'm in on that. You promised I'd be in on that.
Let's do it. We'll go back out in August and compete against Fezzik and Covers and the rest of the guys and see how we stack up.
Oh, I can't wait. I'm so excited. Hey, there was a huge, not huge, but should have been huge, but there's a big boxing fight on Saturday that kind of came and went. Nobody even talked about
it.
Hopkins Mayweather. It was in Vegas.
Yeah,
nobody even knew about it.
Nobody even discussed it.
It was at Mandalay.
What's weird is I didn't get any questions about it at all. Like, not one person said to me, hey, what are you thinking about this fight? Do you know anything about this fight? Nothing. And it's a good thing because I wasn't paying attention to it in the least. It was probably the last thing on my mind in terms of the betting world was that fight.
I wish I had even known it was coming because I would have loaded up on Hopkins. I have a whole theory on, I think there's some sort of boxing that one of the best gambling values in sports is the washed up boxer who still gets wagers on him just because he's the name. And if you look at the careers of Sugar Ray Leonard, Thomas Hearns, Ali, the really, really big time guys, they always hang around 4 or 5 fights too long and they'll lose 3 or 4 of those 5 fights, but they're either favorites or the odds are really close. But that Roy Jones was a perfect example.
Yes.
That guy's been washed. He was washed up 4 years ago.
You know what I would like to look back and find? Who was favored in the Hagler-Sugar Ray fight? You know, that
Hagler. Epic.
Hagler was favored?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
God, that was a great fight.
I think he was 2.5 or 3 to 1.
Wow. That's short.
Yeah. Well, because Sugar Ray, you forget, he had the detached retina. He hadn't really he'd fought once in 5 years. Everybody thought he was going to get killed. Hagler was at the peak of his powers, allegedly. But as it turned out, he was pretty rusty.
I remember exactly where I was watching that fight. That was an intense fight. That's when boxing was great. Like those early 80s fights. I feel like it hasn't been like that for 25 years.
Do the Sharps, do they throw themselves in? Do they have the same kind of stats that they have for college basketball and stuff like that for boxing?
I mean, they all play it because, they all play everything. No one's ignoring a chance to bet on something. But what happens is a lot of times these guys will follow what other guys are doing that they trust. So I actually don't know many boxing guys. I don't know anyone who does boxing religiously. So I couldn't tell you what kind of metrics they have for that as opposed to football and basketball.
Yeah.
But I do know that there's probably plenty of guys who go out there and don't know much about boxing, but they like to get a sweat on, and so they go and they follow whatever their buddy is doing who happens to know a lot about boxing because they do it. A lot of guys who do college basketball do that for the NFL, so it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
There are a lot of guys out there betting NFL, 10 dimes, 20 dimes a game, which is a dime is $1,000. They don't know anything about the NFL. They're just betting it because they have buddies who know what they're doing and they follow what they're doing.
The Redskins made the McNabb trade. How has that affected the future bet?
I haven't seen it yet. I actually thought your call, was going to be a bookmaker I know who was going to answer that question for me. But I wouldn't be surprised if it moves it at all. I mean, if you look now, there's so many people already saying the Redskins are the favorite to win that division that they leapfrogged the Eagles and the Giants. So, of course, there's going to be money coming in at 50 to 1 on the Redskins. You got to remember last year, the Redskins were a team that through the middle of the season Avery Sharp loved playing. I mean, they had a tendency to cover bets, and they had a defense that was solid enough to keep them in games. So if all of a sudden you put that defense, no matter what's happening with Haynesworth, you put that defense on the field with a quarterback who can score points, and you've raised the level in interest. And so if someone's going to get him at 50-1, they're going to put money down on it. We should, over the course of the next couple of days, it'll be interesting to see how that trends.
Well, I'm on one of the websites right now, one of the big ones, and Washington is 20-1.
There you go.
And I think that's dropped. It was significantly.
It's a significant drop, because last night I Twittered something about it at, I don't know what time, 10 or 11, asking how soon before it drops from 50-1, and now it's at 20-1.
You have to love gamblers. Philly trades Donovan McNabb because they can't win a Super Bowl with him. Donovan McNabb gives a press conference. That was a great run. The only thing we didn't do is win a Super Bowl. He gets traded, and everybody's like, oh, Super Bowl odds.
He's gonna win the Super Bowl in Washington. Yeah. Something's going to be different. Even though he was finally getting good receivers in Philly and has nobody in Washington.
Yeah, this is going to be a disaster. All right, Chad Millman. We'll talk to you before the playoffs. Before the NBA playoffs, there's a 3-week window or 3-day window between the end of the season and the start of the playoffs. You're not going to follow hockey, right?
No.
Do the Sharps even care?
No.
Is there a Canadian Sharp? You don't have like...
Oh, you know what? I'm going to look around. I'll see if I can find a Canadian Sharp.
Come on. Try to find one. Maybe you'll have some cool name like High Stick Harry.
Everyone in your world is a Damon Runyon character.
Steve the Slasher.
We'll talk NBA Zigzag Theory pre-playoffs.
Oh, beautiful. I'm excited for that. All right, Chad Millman.
All right.
Thanks.
Talk to you later.
We're going to call Jacko right now just because the Red Sox won last night. 1-0. Yankees 0-1. It's good times. No reason not to call him.
Complex Litigation, this is John.
Oh, Johnny!
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Here we go.
Oh, Johnny!
Is that you applauding, or is there someone else?
Yeah, that was me applauding.
Wow.
Actually, it's Neil Diamond. He showed up after he sang last night.
A traitor to New York.
Hands! Holding hands! Johnny, how you feeling? How do you like the Chan Ho Park acquisition?
Well, I'm not a big fan. I hope it's not like a Samson and Delilah situation where all his ability was in his beard. Once he shaved the beard, the James Brolin Amityville Horror beard, he just is a horror. That's what my concern is.
Can I walk you through my emotions during the whole thing?
By all means.
I didn't know who they were going to bring in because for some reason I didn't know who you. I knew Jabbo was going to be the eighth inning guy, but I was, and I knew Tomaso Marte was obviously involved, but I wasn't sure who that guy was who's going to be brought in that exact situation. And I was thinking to myself during the commercial, wow, I hope they bring in somebody terrible that I didn't realize they had on the roster.
Sure enough.
Come back and say, like, oh, it's Chan Ho Park.
That'll do.
I love Korean meatballs.
Right.
That was great.
He'll fulfill that requirement. Yeah, there you go.
Your bullpen stinks, Johnny.
Yeah, let's not go crazy. It's one game. Let's not go nuts.
Jabba looks sweaty. Like it looked like he was afraid he was going to get shot or something on the mound. What was up with him?
I don't know.
That couldn't have made you feel good, Johnny.
No, I didn't. I didn't feel strongly about it. That's for sure. No, it was a little shaky. A little shaky start. I was dancing around my living room at 5-1, and the two homers off Beckett.
Yeah.
You know, I love to see Beckett fail, so that was exciting. But, the old cliche, no lead is ever safe at Fenway Park, and it turned out to be true once again.
Wasn't the pitching and defense battle we expected, Johnny.
No, that's for sure. The Sox on pitching and defense, not so much.
I blame my wife for Josh Beckett's performance because in the first inning he was warming up, and she pointed out that, and it's a little bit of a reach, but it was just enough there that it made me laugh. That he looks like Boston Rob from Survivor.
Really?
And so then I spent like the next couple innings talking like Boston Rob as he was pitching.
Think that was the jinx?
You don't watch Survivor, but it was funny in the living room.
I used to watch Survivor when Boston Rob was on, and I realized that he's back on now in like a celebrity one or an all-star one. I haven't seen that, but yes, I am familiar with Boston Rob's work. Is he still married to that woman he met on the show, by the way?
He is.
It's good. It's good. Those kids can make it.
Hold on. This is one of the only impressions I can do.
Oh, good.
Listen, I'm up 2-1 in the count. I'm thinking about throwing a slider here.
That's pretty good.
I might try to cross him up with a fastball inside.
Very good.
Thank you.
Very good.
But that ruined Josh Beckett for me. I think the Boston Rob, because Boston Rob failed on Survivor last Thursday. So that connection, I think, tainted him.
Right. The stank of failure was all over him, yeah.
I do worry, though, about Beckett against the Yanks. It just seems like he's afraid to just throw the cheese.
I think they said there was some stat I saw. He pitched 32 innings against them last year and gave up 34 hits.
Yeah.
Something like that. So, you know, I mean, based on his record and his ability, that's a pretty good job by the Yanks there. They hit him pretty well.
It's a lot of nibbling.
I don't know, a lot of nibbling
with him on the Yanks.
I don't know if he has one too many necklaces or one too few. He looks like Mr. T in the A-team. What's going on out there?
He signed his extension today.
I saw that, 4 years, $68 million.
I think he was going to hold off, but then after yesterday, he's like, oh, do we still have that offer for them?
Where do I sign? Absolutely. He ran to that contract to sign it.
Got to say, though, Johnny, you were a little bit afraid of Adrian Beltre, or as John Miller called him all game, Beltre.
Yeah.
You were a little afraid of him. He was taking some big cuts yesterday.
He did. He did take a couple of big cuts. He did.
He's pretty good. You got to admit, he's pretty good, Johnny.
Yeah, maybe he found the right combination of stimulants and ingredients and what have you, and resurrected his career when he had that 44 home runs.
Dare you bring that up?
And speaking of performance enhancing drugs, I mean, can we put the fork in Big Poppy or?
Come on.
I mean, there was a 93 mile an hour fastball he swung when it was in Posada's glove.
Yeah, that wasn't good.
One of the few balls that Posada actually caught, which was always a problem as a catcher. They can't catch.
I actually sent an email to somebody yesterday saying how I really think I'm going to enjoy this Red Sox season because we have eighth and ninth inning relievers that I trust. We have got good defense, which it's nice to have a ball hit in the outfield and know somebody's going to catch it.
Yeah, you're not nervous.
Pretty much everybody in the infield, any ground ball, I feel like they're going to make the play. Which I can't remember the last time I felt that. The one drawback is really every David Ortiz at bat.
Yeah.
It's just depressing. It just makes me feel bad, and I don't want to get mad at him, and it's just sad.
I will say this. Like I didn't get as much enjoyment out of your 7-8-9 last night in the lineup as I did last year when you saw Veritek's name and lights flashing before you as an automatic out. Scooter was a little frisky.
He's frisky. I liked him. I mean, I'd obviously seen him when he played against the Red Sox. He never really stood out, and it's hard to really evaluate these guys till you're rooting for them. But I thought he had good at-bats. He missed one grounder up the middle that, you know, maybe, who knows? It seems like he's, like, slightly above average defensively. But
yeah,
he had some frisky at-bats. Mike Cameron, whatever.
Yeah, you know.
He's all right.
Yeah.
Feeling good though, Johnny. I gotta say, feeling good.
Yeah, you may go 162-0. You're off to the right start.
I think the Yanks might have made a serious mistake not putting Hughes as the eighth inning guy.
Well, then you have Jabba as a starter. Neither option was really attractive. I mean, I think that they've totally ruined Jabba is what is really, frankly, what's come down to. You know, I mean, the yo-yoing back and forth, I just think that he's shot mentally or physically or maybe both. Who knows? Maybe he was just like a meteor, you know, flash in the pan. It might be time to dial back some expectations on Jabba, I think.
He really did not look confident or... It just seemed like he came out there thinking, oh, God.
It's game one. No. You know, we can't go crazy.
We can. We can absolutely go crazy. Did you look at the standings today?
We can draw all kinds of conclusions. Yeah, 1-0. 0-1. I see. Game behind. Game back.
My one last thing. The Hughes thing. Like, he's not even pitching until April 15th.
Phil Hughes. Oh, right.
Yeah, that doesn't make a lot of sense. Why not use him in the bullpen and have him throw one inning?
Well, I don't know what it is about baseball, but if you use a guy in the bullpen, then you can't use him, you know, as a starter.
He's got to throw anyway, though.
I know, as a side session, so have him throw an inning here or an inning there. Mm. I don't disagree, but who knows?
All right, scale 1 to 10.
No, please.
Come on.
Like a 1, nothing to worry about. One game. It's all good.
All right, Johnny.
I am worried about CeCe's weight, I'll tell you that. I mean, my God. He looked like an offensive lineman. Was that Flozell Adams last night or CeCe Sabathia?
I'm not worried by his weight. I'm delighted by it.
Good God. Even my wife watched 2 minutes of the game, and that was her comment. It was like, what happened to CeCe in the offseason? I'll tell you what happened to him. Not a lot of workouts.
Red Sox 1-0, Yankees 0-1. All's right with the world. Talk to you soon.
Later.
Target to set off.
Whoa. Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.
With all the talk about sports, Bill Simmons neglected to mention this important just-breaking news. Subway now has breakfast. And unlike the competition, you can get it made just the way you want. Like the Subway Western Egg White Muffin Melt. Add jalapenos, banana peppers, tomatoes, or try Monterey Cheddar. Build your better breakfast at Subway. And after you build your better breakfast, grab your favorite $5 footlong to go. Made to your order all day, every day. Only at Subway.